they ever tried to, or they, members of the press or anybody else, approach you trying to get you to let them have some information which was meant to be confidential?
No, I think we were always aware of that, and gee, we wouldn't have done that. I was taken out to dinner once, and I think I was expected to be friendly or to be grateful for this, and you know, that's one way that people do that, to soften the soften you up, but it didn't work, whatever it was. I can't even remember now, but I do remember being taken to dinner.
But you don't remember by whom? Or?
No, probably just as well. Or what for? No.
Because was there a sense that within the office that this thing was something you had to be aware of?
Oh, yes. I mean, sure. Presumably, I'm sure at one time we would have been told. Everybody was always aware of that sort of thing. You know, it wasn't always from the press. It could be from anybody.
Yeah.
And that's why we were given our security clearances. And, of course, I was lucky because having come from the Foreign Office, I was probably, in some ways, even now, I think I'm more aware of security issues than a lot of Australians. Because I think some of them go gung-ho about things. And we were very gung-ho about security before the Hilton bombing.
So in terms of the press operation, while we were... Did that change for government? Did you work for Tami? Did that any people still trying to get some information from you? Or?
No. I probably knew less then because it was more social. And yes, no, they weren't trying to badger us or squeeze information from us.
Now, this is quite a different angle. Were there any, what you might call, one might call humorous or funny incidents that happened that you know, to you or around you in the time you were here?
I mentioned the one about Droopy slobbering all over Tammy's skirt before the... And probably not so funny, but every morning when Malcolm would come to work and he'd roll up at the side entrance, the Prime Minister's entrance of the House of Reps, and he was so tall and he always used to look as though he was looking down his nose at the media. And Tammy said, when you get out of the car, stand in the gutter. She said, and then the press are on the same level as you, so he dutifully stood in the gutter every time he got there for a media interview, because they were always waiting for him when he arrived. And another bit naughty incident was when one of our advisors, who was a very closed sort of person, he wasn't, he was always shutting his door, and we didn't know what he was doing in there, had no idea, always shut his door. And Kathy went to his door one day to try and open it. It was locked. And she's rattling the bloody door. And she says, are you in there? Are you in there? What are you doing? Open the door. There was no answer. She said, open the door. I want to come in and ask you something, whatever it was. She said, what are you doing in there? Are you playing with yourself? So I think he might have come to the door then. But she shouted it out for all to hear. No doubt Malcolm could have heard it down the corridor. He didn't say those sort of things in those days. And there was a time, as I said, about dear Henry Dunajeff, who ironed my the seating plan that had fallen in the wet grass. It was just gorgeous. And I was in a kerfuffle about that. So he came to the rescue. And he was the most sweet man. And he'd say, oh, you're here, Caroline. Now I know the event will be a success. And you think, oh, yeah, oh, nice. He was just gorgeous. We had good times. We had good relations with the people at the lodge. There were some very loyal people. Brian George was a butler who went, I think, to work for Kerry Packer. Brian just died recently, actually. Some very good chefs. Women's Weekly did a thing on Tammy and followed her around for a day, which probably took 2 days, but, you know, the day in the life of.
Were you involved in that?
I beg your pardon?
Did you take an active role in that yourself?
Yes, I was in it, yes. And we're chatting on the plane and taking photographs of us. And Tammy was not a good flyer. She was a white-knuckle flyer, and I wasn't much better. So between the two of us, I wasn't very good. And particularly when we had the aborted takeoff on the Concorde.
Tell me about that.
Well, we were flying from... Jeff Yeam was on board as the Secretary of PM&C. We were flying from New York to London. And big deal, you know, we're on Concorde, and Jackie Onassis was on the plane too, which is exciting. And we didn't know what to expect. And Tammy said, as we got on, this guy in greasy overalls got off, and she looked at him, And in retrospect, she knew that obviously there'd been something wrong with the mechanics or the hydraulics. And we all got on, sat in our places, went thundering down the runway because it's little nose down when they're taking off. Then we suddenly screamed to a halt. We didn't know what was going on. You don't know what to expect in Concorde. It's like going to the moon or something for us. And so then they came around and said, oh, sorry, there's been a slight problem. I'm afraid we have to go back to the terminal. And so we thought, well, we don't know if we're coming back to Concorde, whether we're going to fly on this aircraft. So we took all our goodies out of the front seat, at the front of the seat, you know, the playing cards and the souvenirs and the menu, stash them all under our arm in case we weren't going to come back, and trooped off to wait in the terminal. And whatever it was, they fixed it and we took off again. But it was quite exciting, to be honest. It's very narrow, sort of like much more tubular than any other aircraft. And only half full. But yeah, Tammy said she, when she saw that man with his greasy overall getting off, she knew something was wrong. Yeah.
What would you say would be your fondest memory of the time you spent here?
Gosh. Well, I think working with Dale was good. I mean, overall, working with Dale, but working with Tammy. Now, I wasn't actually working in Parliament House when I worked for Tammy, although I was to-ing and fro-ing. So I loved those two jobs. I loved them. And I think you've got to love a job to be good at it. It's an overall good feeling about it being a privilege and an exciting time to be there right up until March, when I just knew that that was the end.
So what would you say then, correspondingly, would have been your worst memory of the time you were here?
I think the first few months in David's office, in the press office, just getting used to the flow, to people, to Australian way of working, things like that.
Mm. And this, you mentioned the Australian way of working, and yet you had actually spent some time working in Sydney.
Yes, but that was different. I think it was different. It wasn't as... they didn't have David Barnett working there for a start. No, I mean, Parliament House is different story.
Why did you decide to leave the job?
Why did I decide? Oh, I didn't decide. They lost the election in March 83. So we were kicked out into the gutter. And in those days we had no payment. There was no... payment like there is these days. We got no money, no job.
But you actually did have a job.
Well, I didn't, because I was personal staff. Had I been a public servant, I would have hopped straight back into the department I belonged to. But I did have a job in that. Malcolm asked me to come and work for him in Melbourne, so that was very lucky. And Dennis White, that was another one of our of the advisors. Dennis went down as supervised again, three girls. So there was Dennis and three girls. And we had boxes and boxes and boxes of letters to Malcolm, which never did get through, saying, sorry, you've gone, or we're glad you've gone, or whatever. All these letters that had to be got through. And Malcolm's future to be looked after, what was he going to be doing, his memoirs. He'd never flown on a commercial flight. So it was also new to him.
Mm.
It was also new.
How long did you do that job?
3 months, I think.
3 months.
Yes, we were working out of his office in Collins Street. And he would be dictating, and my 120 shorthand wasn't fast enough to keep up with him.
So was that the reason you decided to up and go?
No. I think it was just about the end, and I was ready to come back to Canberra.
Mm. So what happened then? What did you go to move to the public service?
I was kicking my heels. I came back to Canberra and I was kicking my heels, and somebody rang me up and said, we're doing the South Pacific Forum. Would you like to come and work on that team? So I said, oh yeah, it'd be good. So I did that.
Mm.
So that's when I went into Prime Minister's Department.
Yeah. During your subsequent career, I mean, from that time on, did you have any... contact with Old Parliament House, or did you come here?
No, I didn't. Never went back.
If you look back on the years that you were, what sort of thoughts and feelings do you have about your years working here?
Well, as I said earlier, I think I grew as a person. And I grew in my career, if you could call it that, being a secretary. I shouldn't downgrade, you know, decry it, but I learnt my own way of working. I learnt how to cope. I learnt to enjoy the work I was doing. I learnt to be proud of what I was doing. So yes, it was really a big learning curve for me, but one that I enjoyed and one that I'm proud of and pleased to look back on.
If you look at the building of this, the Old Parliament House today, what role do you think it plays, continues to have?
Memories. I did wonder what was going to happen to it when they moved up to New Parliament House, and I think for a long time nobody knew. And I always thought it would be absolutely wonderful as a music conservatory. All these little rooms, rehearsal rooms, performance rooms, areas. Hopefully the Museum of Australian Democracy is going to give people a sense of how democracy works and what their history is. I've only seen part of the collection, and I know the Governor General's given a piece to it, and people will be researching. So I think its time is yet to come. And, you know, like 100 years from now, if we're all still on this earth, it's going to be amazing, amazing place to be. And hopefully that the whole of this building will be used, because I hate to see it empty, really. And it's a pity, I think, to see all these empty rooms. But anyway.
Any last points you'd like to make?
No, I can't think of any at the moment. But thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for contributing and being willing to take part in this interview.
And anybody who's listening, I hope you weren't too bored with me.
As we mentioned when we spoke to the senior staff member, Michael Richards, we may try to get organise a further interview, a separate interview
talking
on,
about
your,
on the
memorabilia
public service career,
and all the matters that you were looking at possibly donating to the...
Possibly donating, yes.
So
that would bring out a lot of memories, I think, because like the royal visit, or the Charles and Diana's visit in London, and or Malcolm's visit, staying at Blair House in Washington, the President's guest house, that was exciting.
So we'll be able to come back to
that.
We'll
do one with pictures.
In the meantime, thank you very much for contributing today, and we certainly, if you find that there are things that you would like to add to what you've said today about any of these matters, when you get the recording of it, then we can arrange another interview session so this can be added to the original.
Oh, good. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Edward.